but that's the old me. Shouting out, my windows roll down, 'cause I don't care anymore, said I don't care.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Hope you are having a beautiful Saturday. Hope we can make it even better with bringing you up to date on everything that's going on with entertainment and pop culture. Joining me to do so, as he does so very often on this program, please welcome from the Pop Culture Analyst channel on YouTube, Jeremy Branch.
Hey, thanks for having me. This is an exciting show, I imagine, for both of us, because for the folks at home that maybe are stumbling across this for the first time, Julio and I, we're fans of music. I know that's not the most controversial take, but I think both of us are people who have been, fans of just all sorts of genres of music for a very long time. So I'm excited to be able to share some of that love of music and kind of our connection to the history of music and film with all of you today. Julio, what are we going to be talking about?
Yeah, it's a very special episode of Let's Go Pensacola. And by that, I don't mean that we're going to be learning, you know, that shoplifting is bad or that, you know, you shouldn't take caffeine pills or, you know.
Which I strongly disagree with both of those sentiments, but we'll move ahead.
Don't trust the shifty guy at the bicycle shop who wants you to take photos with your shirt off or, you know, anything like that. what other very special episodes am I forgetting here, Jeremy? But this kind of came up in conversation over a number of things. You know, we're fans of music. We like the way when music is used well in movies. And by that, I'm not talking about score. I'm not talking about not a musical, not a movie like, okay, you know, Purple Rain, where the songs are written for the movie or anything like that. We're talking about like the use of existing music in movies, or, you know, it can be maybe songs that were commissioned for the movie, but they were, you know, pop songs, for lack of a better term, or popular music, not necessarily even pop songs, but like, you know, songs by known artists that weren't just necessarily made up for the movie, or maybe they were, but I realize we're kind of hemming and hawing.
Needle drops even, right?
Needle drops is probably... That's become like the vernacular for it, I think, over the last few years. It's not something that was used like when we were growing up in films, but for like the last like 10 years, that's kind of been a vogue term for it. Is, you know, when the non-diegetic generally music comes up during the movie that contributes to the movie. Sometimes the music is diegetic too. And if you don't know what that means, diegetic means it's used, yeah, it has a source within the film, whether they've, you know, walked into a bar and the song is playing on the jukebox, or the characters are discussing the song or whatever, they know that the characters know the song is playing versus it just being music that is set to the scene. So
there's an interesting kind of gray area there, but so we're going to talk about times that it's used effectively. We're going to talk about times that it's used ineffectively. And before we do jump onto that, you and I, we're a couple years different in age. And I know that in the 1990s, movie soundtracks were huge. They would almost come out accompanying every big blockbuster. Is that a thing that was new to the 90s, or did they do that in the 80s as well?
I mean, it goes back even further than that, really. I mean, if you look at... Like, I would kind of peg that to certain music stars in the 50s crossing over to movie stardom. Like, Elvis Presley and Frank Sinatra are the two main examples that I'm thinking of here.
Okay.
You know, where these singers become actors, they make these movies with a lot of their music in them, and then there's the soundtrack album, and, you know, you could think of... Elvis is probably the biggest example of this. If you think about things like Viva Las Vegas or Jailhouse Rock, or, you know, these things where there were whole movies either built around Elvis songs or Elvis songs that were done as the title song for the movie. I think that's kind of the roots of that. I mean, there's examples even before that, honestly, but I think that's kind of where it really starts. I think it comes into play more throughout the 70s. I think when you get directors like Martin Scorsese starting to come up and kind of the auteur era of filmmaking that starts in the 70s, I think that's where it really starts, but where I think it really reaches a level of the kind of prominence that you're talking about is in the 80s.
So let me ask you this, as far as your own collection, what are some of your like go-to movie soundtracks that either you owned or you just really liked listening to?
I mean, the conversation starts with John Hughes.
Okay,
it just absolutely does. Like he was, in his day, in a way that I don't think has really been duplicated, was the master of putting together a soundtrack album that exposed a lot of new artists, or at least a lot of artists that were new to American ears, that fit the audience of the film, that fit the characters in the film, and that really kind of became a character unto itself. So I think you're looking at 16 Candles, you're looking at Weird Science, you're looking at The Breakfast Club. And then I think the all-time champion of this group in terms of the best all-around soundtrack album is Pretty in Pink.
Okay. Yeah, I can see how you would like that. I want to hit you with just like a rapid-fire list of the ones that I owned and remembered listening to.
Yeah.
If any of them jump out to you, stop and let me know, okay?
Well, I know the first one you're going to say here, and I'm going to agree with you, but go ahead.
Hit me.
The Crow.
Oh, fantastic soundtrack.
Yeah,
you know, I think an underappreciated one is also The Crow, City of Angels, but then Judgment Night, Pulp Fiction, Spawn, Queen of the Damned, Batman Forever, Batman and Robin, Romeo and Juliet. One of the last really good ones was Garden State. We got Donnie Darko, and then also more recently is Drive. Those are some that I just absolutely love, and some of them may come up in this conversation, but I just wanted to take a second to acknowledge like some of the movie soundtracks that regardless of how it was used in the movie itself, I really loved.
I think you got a lot of good examples in there for sure. Judgment Night was one that was more engineered for the film in that it was really based on collaborations between alternative rock bands and hip hop artists.
Maybe and the start of nu metal.
I mean, I don't want to blame nu metal on it, but, but I don't think you're necessarily totally off base either. But I mean, I think probably best remembered for Just Another Victim by Helmet and Alice Payne. Great song.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of really good collaborations on that album. I do think it's a very solid soundtrack album and it works for the film. And I think that's another thing to bear in mind here. You can have a film soundtrack that is a good compilation of songs that doesn't necessarily say anything about the film. And, you know, I mentioned all those John Hughes films, and I did not mention, how dare I, Some Kind of Wonderful, which is also just a great soundtrack album and another one that really, really fits in that. So, I mean, John Hughes to me is like the top of the mountain for this.
Well, and this is interesting because it kind of, like you said, sometimes the songs don't necessarily fit the scenes, but they build to an, like, it creates the feel of a movie independent from intricately working within a scene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fair.
Oh, I was going to say, would you say that like John Hughes movies are built with the song in mind of the scene or with the soundtrack more building to the style or the characters within the movie?
I think that varies depending on the film and the situation. I mean, Pretty in Pink being the most obvious example in that the psychedelic first song existed first. And
so
the title comes from the song versus the song just being the title track of the movie.
Okay.
And in fairness, and Richard Butler from the Psychedelic First will be the first one to tell you this, the movie kind of misses the point of the song in a lot of ways.
That happens from time to time, doesn't it?
Yeah, but I think that the film overall makes such a good use of music, and it's such a great compilation of songs that it all works out in the end. We got to take a break. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Tonight, I'm gonna have myself a
time I feel alive.
Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Nihilist channel on YouTube. And that song right there, Don't Stop Me Now by Queen, is kind of part of the reason we're having this conversation about movie music in general. First of all, that song has become one of the most overused songs in movies. It has been in more movies and TV shows than I could possibly rattle off over the last few years.
You know, Beastie Boys is another of those groups, but I digress.
Yeah, but in that case, it's more than one song. This is just one particular song. I mean, lots of other sure. Queen songs have been used in movies too, and they've got a long history of being tied intimately to movies, whether it be Flash Gordon, for which they did the entire soundtrack. Also Highlander, they did the entire soundtrack for that movie.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, Queen and movies do go together kind of hand in hand. But this song in particular has just been used so many times, and there's been times that it's been used terribly, and there's been times when it has been used to absolute perfection. And that was kind of one of the seeds that brought this up for discussion for me and Jeremy, among a few other things that have happened recently in pop culture and entertainment. Recently on a flight, I watched the movie Shaun of the Dead again.
Heard of it.
Directed by Edgar Wright, who I think is just one of the best people when it comes to using music in movies. One of my favorite directors. And that his use of this song in that movie is the perfect use of that song, and it is the reason why it has been in so many other movies since then, because so many other people are chasing the high that Edgar Wright achieved with the use of this song in that film and have tried to duplicate it, and it can't be duplicated. And it's
so when we were talking about Kong X Godzilla a couple of weeks back, you've mentioned a couple of the needle drops in that movie and how they just didn't really fit with the film itself. And now we're talking about Edgar Wright, who is this auteur filmmaker who does know how to use this type of music well. Is there an example, like a counter to your, this movie, Shaun of the Dead uses it well? Is there an example of a movie that we can just look at for comparison to say this movie doesn't use it well?
Well, I mean, I think there's a few that you can that I can name off the top of my head that don't do it well. Godzilla X Kong, like you just mentioned, is a great example of it. There's like one song choice in that movie that's like, all right, I kind of get what they're going for here, and it kind of fits. And that was when they're diving into the Hollow Earth and Twilight Zone by Golden Earring is playing. It's like, all right, yeah, now I'm stepping into the Twilight Zone. It's a little on the nose, but I get it. But
so, okay, let's establish some parameters then. What to you makes it done well? Is it the song choice? Is it the way it relates to the movie with the lyrics? Can you talk me through that?
It can be any number of things. It can be the song choice. It can be how it relates to the characters and the themes of the movie. It can be how it is used within the movie, how it is either used to tell the story or to contrast to the story or to contrast to a character moment. I mean, like a great example of that in a recent movie, even though it was a movie that maybe some people didn't like as much, was The Marvels, when they used Memory from Cats for the scene with all the Flurkins running rampant over the S.H.I.E.L.D. station. Like, that worked. Okay. It was really funny, and it fit because it was Memory from Cats and it was a scene about cats, but it was in a subversive kind of way.
Can it just be a kick-ass song? And on the flip side of that, can it be a bad song? And I think you just mentioned an example of that. Can it be just a really good song that adds to the vibe? Or can it also be a really bad song that just works well within the context of the movie?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Both of those are scenarios where it can work or where it doesn't work. I think where it didn't work in Godzilla X Kong is that every other song choice in the movie was just like, why is this here? Like the most egregious one being when the character's flying in to put the big cyber glove on Kong's arm, and it's set to "I Was Made by for Loving You" by Kiss.
yeah, like, made no sense and not a great song.
This says nothing about any character in this film or anything about this scene. It's an okay song, but you know why is that here? It doesn't make any sense. It's like, you know, I don't necessarily have a better song suggestion for that without being super blatantly obvious. And yeah, they'd kind of established already that we were going to get this like early 80s hard rockish kind of soundtrack to it, but okay. And
so
the one character that identified with that kind of music got eaten at the beginning of the movie.
So, yeah, that's a fair point. So do you think that there's intrinsic value in a filmmaker just using music that they like, or would you advise against that in favor of doing something that is either more thematically or tonally relevant?
And ideally, if you're going to make a good film and you're going to make good use of popular music in your good film, then you're going to choose songs that fit the theme, whether they are songs that are beloved to you or songs that just make sense.
Yeah, I get what you mean. I think that like there's a couple different ways that we can take this conversation, but I think that we wouldn't be having this conversation in particular about needle drops used poorly if it didn't come to a filmmaker like James Gunn.
Yeah, and for better or for worse, James Gunn has, because he's done it so well, and he is really the master of this in a way that very few other filmmakers are, that there have been a slew of people that have tried to do what he does and don't do it well. And I think it's really interesting because you can put two movies against each other that are more or less, one is kind of a sequel to the other, where the first one being, all right, well, we'll just drop it here. It's very obvious that the cut of Suicide Squad that we got, which may or may not have been the cut that David Ayer, the director, originally intended.
Yeah, maybe.
Very much tried to take that Guardians of the Galaxy approach that James Gunn had done in a lot of ways. And one of which is the use of popular music in there. But it was just so tired and obvious, and like they were picking the lowest common denominator songs that were the most obvious that had been used so many times. I don't never need to see Sympathy for the Devil in a movie again. It's been used well in the past, but
yeah,
it's too on the nose now. Bohemian Rhapsody.
Interview with the Vampire uses it well, I will say, in context of Lestat as a character. But I agree with what you're saying. I think one of the fundamental differences is while James Gunn doesn't use music that I necessarily love, it works so well within the context of the film because of the character Peter Quill, where I didn't feel like David Ayer had any real connection to the choices of songs in it. They were just trying to emulate similar needle drops.
Well, and when it's done well, it can recontextualize the song and make a song that you kind of maybe didn't think too much of in the past a favorite. And I think
Rubber Band is a great example of that.
The Guardian soundtracks in general are a great example of that. But then, again, to make this contrast, so they put out Suicide Squad. It made a lot of money. They had to make a sequel, but they weren't happy with it creatively. They bring in James Gunn himself to direct The Suicide Squad, which is kind of sort of a sequel, but kind of goes in its own way, too. And the use of music in that versus the use in Ayer's Suicide Squad is just night and day. And it's right from the beginning to the opening credits where they're panning into Belrev Prison, and you've got Johnny Cash at San Quentin on the soundtrack. You've got opening to People Who Died by the Jim Carroll Band, which
so
is
awesome.
Just absolutely so works. And every music choice, and they're not all, you know, it's not all as you know, that soundtrack is a lot more expansive than, say, the Guardian soundtracks are, that tended to focus on a certain period, at least the first two, where this one doesn't necessarily set on a moment in time. And you have things like the Pixies' Hey being used in this.
Mm-hmm.
And again, just used so, so well. And it's just, it's the feeling that it inspires. And you can tell when it's like, here's a popular song, kids. You like this song, so you're going to like this movie, versus I chose this song because it goes with this scene, and now every time you think of this movie, the song, you're going to think of this scene, and you're going to think of this movie.
There's a movie that neither of us really liked. I think both of us liked the film. Neither of us really liked the use of this particular song in the film, and I'm curious if you have any instinct as to why that is, and I'm referring to Just a Girl, or I'm Just a Girl by No Doubt in Captain Marvel.
Well, that was another
why
movie.
Doesn't that work?
That was another one that I was going to cite as being a movie that does not use music effectively, that again was kind of trying for that James Gunn kind of formula, that and they had a decent idea for how to go about it, in that, you know, this was a film that in a way was all about woman power. And it was set in the mid-90s, and so they were using primarily female-fronted artists from the mid-90s.
So conceptually, it works.
Yeah,
it's a good
song.
Why doesn't it work?
Well, I mean, there's a number of things that don't work in that movie, and it was one of the movies, like I said, I was going to cite as an example of where it doesn't work. But let's take a little break, and when we come back, we'll get into that. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Take this pink ribbon off my eyes. I'm exposed, and it's no big surprise. Don't you think I know exactly where I stand? This
Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Knowledge Channel on YouTube, and we are talking about the use of music in movies. And we were, right before the break, just bringing up this particular song, Just a Girl by No Doubt, and the way it was used in the movie Captain Marvel. And I understand why the filmmakers felt compelled to use this song for this movie. It does kind of speak to this character, to Captain Marvel, and kind of going through the same things of, you know, being a woman and expressing her power, and that she doesn't need men to put her in her place or to tell her what to do. And thematically, the song kind of works. It doesn't, and it works in the overall idea of that they were trying to go with a lot of 90s female-fronted music in this movie. it doesn't work for the scene that they used it for. They used this as the score for the big climactic fight scene in the movie. And that's just not what this song is. This is not an action song. This is not a fight song. Like
I agree with you.
I would have
used, I think that there's a part of like intuition plays a factor in this as well. And if the vibe of the song just doesn't fit with an action scene, then regardless of if it works thematically, it just doesn't feel right.
Yeah, this is more like, to me, this song is, she's already proven it, and she's saying that, you know, this is who I am. To okay. me, I still would have used this song in the movie, but I would have used this for the closing credits. This would have been the song that comes up at the end of the movie for me. Like the last scene, and it's playing over the closing credits. That would have been a perfect use of this song in this movie for me. It would have made perfect sense. It would have still fit the time period. It would have fit the character. And just that little move, I think, would have redeemed this song musically for this movie. There are other problems with this movie in terms of music. My other big problem with this, and I've said this before, is while the movie is set in the 90s, Carol Danvers has been off planet for, what is it, 10, 15 years? She has none of this music means anything to her as a character. So when you have a scene that's taking place in the character's mind, and there is a diegetic record player there playing Come As You Are by Nirvana, that song should not mean anything to Carol at all.
Yeah, that's a good point. Just now mentioned Nirvana, and it made me, I just want to drop the reference real quick. The Batman's use of Something in the Way is awesome.
Yeah, fantastic.
So back to the Captain Marvel thing, sorry.
Yeah, so I think there are just, it was one of those cases where it was like, this is a popular song, we got to get it in here somewhere, let's put it on the fight scene. No.
Yeah.
And then the song that they did close the movie out with, that did come up over the end credits, is an artist that makes sense to use in that same context. It's Courtney Love and Hole, but it's the song Celebrity Skin, which, again, doesn't really fit this character. Also came out a couple of years after the time period of the movie, which you can maybe excuse with it being an end credit song, but that's still a factor in there, that it's anachronous. And it just, like, there are other whole songs that would have been better to use in there.
Yeah.
I like the song Celebrity Skin. It just didn't work for me here. And actually, you maybe could have chosen a different whole song and used that for the fight scene, and that might have worked. And that's actually something I hadn't thought of before, because I had a couple other songs in my mind that I've always thought would be better to set that fight scene to. But I could have seen putting that fight scene to Violet by Hole.
Oh, what a great song. A great choice. Or even the song that they use, is it called Cannonball, that they use in the movie, that could have been set to the action scene, it would have been cool.
Do they use Cannonball by the Breeders in the movie?
I thought they did that.
Yeah, that's Cannonball, cool. But I don't see that as a big fight scene song either. That's one of my all-time favorite songs, but oh no, you're thinking of, I'm sorry, that's, they did not use Cannonball. You're thinking of Connection by Elastica.
Yes, I am.
Which I also don't see as a real fight song, but it's definitely a song that I'm glad they included. I love that song, and I love that band. And again, fits the time period. The two songs I've always had in my mind as would have been better choices for that that particular scene. There's a song by L7 that I can't really say the name of, but it starts with S, and it's S List.
Okay.
Again, I don't know if maybe that wouldn't have flown in a Disney movie. Marvel is owned by Disney, so I get that. That may be possible. The other one that I would have, that really is honestly my first choice for the scene, is Rebel Girl by Bikini Kill.
Oh yeah, yeah, great like, choice.
That
great
song
choice.
Just has that energy, and it's a short song, so maybe it might have even been too short for the scene. But and maybe lyrically it doesn't quite hit on all the right points, but I mean, it just energetically it just would have fit, and this that Kathleen Hanna's voice ringing out in that scene, just I have long wanted somebody to reset that scene to Rebel Girl, just to see if I'm right and see how it works there. I think the ideas were there, the spirit was there for that movie, but it just fell short in that regard. And I'm not knocking the whole movie as a whole. The movie has things I like about it, things I don't like about it. But the use of music in that movie is one of the things where I think it just really falls down.
Yeah, I totally agree. While we were kind of on the topic of movies that did it effectively, you mentioned James Gunn. I think there are a couple other filmmakers that, like, we got to give a shout out to, like Quentin Tarantino, Martin Scorsese.
Yeah, I mean, you briefly mentioned the Pulp Fiction soundtrack, and I think I'd even go back further than that to Reservoir Dogs, his first film.
Stuck in the Middle?
Yeah, well, that whole film, the conceit of that film being set to the K-Billy's Super Sounds of the 70s radio station that gave them an excuse to have all 70s music in there. But all the music choices, that movie completely recontextualized the song Stuck in the Middle with You.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely did. In a way that, you know, a couple other films have done, you know, a director we haven't mentioned here, Jonathan Demme, is another one that's, you know, again, made great use of music throughout his films and also has done a number of great music documentaries, including Stop
Who
Making
is that?
Sense. Jonathan Demme?
Uh-huh.
Director of Silence of the Lambs and Something Wild. And
okay.
Yeah, great filmmaker. But his use in Silence of the Lambs of songs like Goodbye Horses by Q Lazarus. And
totally recontextualized.
And American Girl by Tom Petty.
Mm-hmm.
The scene of the woman that's about to get kidnapped by Buffalo Bob, and she's driving down the road singing along to American Girl on the radio. Like, that is something I think about every time I hear American Girl now.
Yeah, good call. When we come back from the break, I'd like to talk a little bit about movies that are actually, like, edited to the music, and we'll dive a little bit deeper into what that actually means, but I think that's an interesting topic as well.
Yeah, we can definitely do that, but yeah, Jonathan Demme, Quentin Tarantino, again, just throughout his career, you know, just finds these songs and that just go perfectly with the movies. Scorsese, of course, yeah, I mean, you think of the use of the climax of Goodfellas and that use of the extended outro from Layla.
And
Scorsese is the one that really used Sympathy for the Devil first and did it so well. Or Gimme Shelter, for that matter, which another song that has just at this point been so overused. But you know, Scorsese is absolutely a master of it. Edgar Wright, I mentioned previously, and we'll talk about him a little more in editing to the song, and that he is somebody that really mastered that technique and just does it so well. But in general,
is Matthew Vaughn in this realm yet?
Who?
Matthew Vaughn. Has he done enough stuff where he uses music that you would kind of put him in that same category?
I think he does it really well. He might be like top of the next tier when he does it really, really well. He does it really, really well. And you kind of mentioned in the break, the use of Freebird in the first Kingsman movie.
Yeah.
Great example of that. Just, again, really recontextualizing a song that's kind of overdone and overplayed, but making it work in the context of that movie to where it recontextualizes it to the point where you don't mind hearing that song that you might be totally sick of. Yeah, I mean, there are a few other examples. Vaughn doing it with one of the best scenes in that regard. And this may be one that we maybe talk about a little more when we talk about editing to the song, but using Jim Croce's Time in a Bottle for the Quicksilver scene in X-Men First Class.
I mean, Days of Future Past.
Was it in Days of Future Past?
I believe so. Don't quote me. I think so.
No, it was First Class. I'm pretty sure.
Quicksilver.
Because I don't think Vaughn did. I don't think Vaughn directed Days of Future Past. Maybe I'm getting it mixed
up.
Well, you know what? We'll check that in the break, and we'll come back into that topic because that is something I want to talk about a little bit too. Because that's a high that continued to be chased in the following movies that they didn't quite meet. You're listening.
Sure.
Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Nihilist channel on YouTube, and we are talking about the use of music in movies. And we, before the break, we were kind of talking about a very famous scene, the scene in X-Men Days of Future Past. It was Days of Future Past, we did check. And not directed by Matthew Vaughn, but directed by somebody who I don't really want to give a whole lot of credit to, but have to in this case, Bryan Singer. Don't want to give credit to him because he's a horrible human being. I use the word human being loosely here. But in this case, just directed a really great scene that everybody really remembers, and that's the scene where Quicksilver goes into his super speed mode and everything around him slows down. And he's racing around this kitchen to the tune of Jim Croce's Time in a Bottle and kind of rearranging everything so that no bullets hit anybody and that everybody's safe and that the antagonists are taken down and that his people are safe. Was a scene that got a lot of praise, justly so. It was really well done. The song choice kind of contrasted a little bit with the action that was on scene, but still had something to say about what was going on and that Quicksilver, with his super speed, literally did have the ability to kind of put time in a bottle and slow things down and do everything that he needed to do in a short amount of time, which, you know, is kind of what the song's about.
Yeah.
And, it just really worked. And then they came to make the next movie, X-Men Apocalypse, and they said, everybody really loved that. We got to do that again. So they did another big scene, bigger scene this time, where there's an explosion going on in the Xavier Institute, and the entire school's at peril, and Quicksilver steps in, and everything moves into slow motion, and it's set to Sweet Dreams by Eurythmics, which we just heard. Great song. Great action piece. But it really, the song didn't say anything about what was going on. It just was time period appropriate because the movie was set in the 80s, but it didn't really say anything about what was going on. And it felt like they were chasing the high.
Yeah. And I think it kind of goes back to our conversation in the last segment about at some point intuition and just the way that it feels plays into it as well. And it's not that I think both of us would probably agree Sweet Dreams is the better song. But just because it felt like such a retread, it just kind of felt disingenuous. Maybe it was the movie that it was wrapped in. It's hard to say, but it just didn't hit the same.
Yeah, I mean, Apocalypse is not as good a movie either. Let's just be honest here. But, but I mean, if you put the two scenes side by side, I just think that, and it also helps that in the case of, Days of Future Past, the music was diegetic. He puts his headphones on and then the song starts. Versus in Apocalypse, it's just kind of there. You know, it's where it's saying something to the character and about the character versus it not saying anything about the character. And it's just a cool song to set the scene to. And I think that's kind of where it sets things apart a little bit. We talked a little bit about songs being, or movies being edited to the music. And I don't think that that is the case in these scenes, but I think that when that works, it just adds another level to it. And again, I brought up Edgar Wright before. I think he's the filmmaker that is just the master of that. And we go back to the song we played at the start of the second segment here, Don't Stop Me Now by Queen, and the way it was used in Shaun of the Dead, to where the action in that scene is edited to that song. And that is where that high comes from, of how that song is used in that movie, as opposed to the numerous other movies it's been used in, from the training sequence in Shazam to, I just can't even think of all the movies it's been in. They're all kind of chasing that, and none of them quite hit it the way that movie hits it.
So I agree. I think, when you look at Baby Driver, which is a film that you mentioned when this conversation came up, you
such
can also feel how the rhythm of the movie is set to the rhythm of the music. And I'm not going to bore everybody with a crash course in video editing, but I think what Julio and I are speaking about right now, edited to the song, would, A, involve the choreography of what you see on screen? Do certain cymbals hit at the same time as maybe a gun is fired, or maybe a snare hits at the same time a gun is fired? Or does a character move as some sort of like beat is happening? That would be one example of it. And then the other example of it would be, does the actual cutting of the film occur at the tempo of the music? So if there's a kick or a snare, are we transitioning from shot to shot? And somebody that I haven't brought up yet, and I think is really pertinent to this conversation, is Robert Rodriguez.
Yeah.
Robert Rodriguez is somebody who directs, scores, edits, writes his movies. So like he's involved in every step of the process. And as a musician, he is someone that really leaned into that. I think the opening scene of Desperado is a really good example of diegetic music being used. There's actually a fight scene that happens with Antonio Banderas on the top of the bar and his two other mariachis with him. And the fight scene is actually choreographed to the music. It's so cool and so effective. And then also T-Bone Tarantula perform Only After Dark in From Dusk Till Dawn, the iconic Salma Hayek scene. It's also actually edited to the music. So I think I wouldn't be surprised to find out Edgar Wright is a musician as well, because that kind of like need for the rhythm to be so synced up to the music seems like the instinct of somebody who is a musician, you know?
Yeah, I mean, Baby Driver is just a masterclass of that kind of filmmaking, though. And it's a film that I don't feel like it gets enough attention. I felt like it really should have been considered. It was nominated for the Oscar for the use of sound in the film. I think it should have won. I think it lost to Dunkirk, if I remember correctly, which, yeah, Dunkirk's a good movie, too, but just the sound design of this movie is just phenomenal. And the way that the music is used in this movie, just every single scene. And I think maybe it's a movie that people are reluctant to go back to a little bit because unfortunately it stars another one of those people that we don't like to talk about too much anymore, Kevin Spacey. It was kind of the last movie he made before everything came out about him.
Yeah.
But it's, I hate that that's the case because it's such a good movie. And again, every scene, the use of the music, and it's all diegetic in this movie. The music is a character in this film. Every bit of music in this film is diegetic, and it is saying something about what's going on. It is synced to the action. It means something to the character. I love this movie so much. And
taking it to the realm of television, one that I don't know that a lot of people would, you know, immediately come to mind, but the way Master of Puppets is used in Stranger Things is freaking awesome.
Stranger Things in general, like that whole series is, again, another masterclass in this kind of thing. And they do sometimes get a little bit anachronistic with the music. Not much. They're pretty good about it, but there's been a couple of examples. The use of I Just Died in Your Arms by Cutting Crew in one episode, that was the episode was set like a year before that song came out. And
how dare they?
Master of Puppets is cutting it real close because it came out like the same month that episode takes place in. But on the other hand, tying it to Eddie Munson is exactly that kind of fan.
Yeah, he is the guy that would have Metallica's new album on the first day that it was released
and would have already learned the guitar parts. Absolutely. Yeah.
If you want to bring this thing all the way back around, Wayne's World's use of Bohemian Rhapsody is diegetic music where the characters are actually singing the song and it cuts on the beats. I'm not familiar with who the director of this movie is. Do you know?
Penelope Spheeris.
Okay.
Probably aside from Wayne's World, best known for the Decline of Western Civilization series of music documentaries. So again, somebody very much knows music. Yeah.
Interesting. So again, it's that I think it's where Our World Collided. That goes for me and Julio, probably you, the listener as well. People who love music and love film and understand that editing is about rhythm. It's about pacing. Editors can save movies. Editors can ruin movies. And it's just one of those roles in film that is so underappreciated because so many people aren't really quite aware of what it takes to pace out something like comedy or something like horror. You hold a shot one millisecond too long and it destroys the tension and it makes the jokes not land and it makes the scares not as effective. So, like, so much respect to editors. I don't think that their praises are sung enough.
Well, and I just think, too, like the other, and that also goes for music supervisors, whether that music supervisor is the director of the film or is somebody that has been hired that is simpatico.
Absolutely.
Music supervisors do an amazing job. It's a job that, like, I've often thought that I would like to have that job. Yeah, because I think I've got a pretty encyclopedic knowledge. I think I could be pretty decent at it. But I think above and beyond all, like the take home that I would give here to anybody that's thinking about this, you know, kind of use of music in a movie, especially if you're a filmmaker yourself, once some song has been used in such an iconic way in a film, unless you can match that, take it off the board. It's done. We don't ever need to hear Fortunate Son again. We don't ever need to hear Bohemian Rhapsody again, or, you know, unless it's
Sabotage by Beastie Boys.
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's a number of songs that, like, there's so much other music out there. Get out there and explore it and find the thing that's right for you. I'll just throw one out there as an example. Plowed by Sponge. I've always wanted to see a car chase set to that song.
Somebody
out there, make that happen. We are done for the week. We will see you back here next week. Until then, you're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.